So Charles Fillmore, our co-founder of Unity, when I think about, you know, he was really big on the 12 powers, his teaching that we're looking at this summer. That was kind of his niche, if you will, and the teachings. And I think his favorite one was probably zeal, from things I've read about him, but especially from this quote that you've probably heard before if you've been around for a while. And the thing about this quote is he said it when he was 94 years old. Here it is. "I fairly sizzle with zeal and enthusiasm and spring forth with a mighty faith to do the things that ought to be done by me." I want to say that when I'm 94 every day, don't you? Yeah, so that kind of enthusiasm, that kind of connection to spirit, because that actually is where zeal, enthusiasm, of course, similar words for the same idea, the same spiritual ability or power. And enthusiasm comes from the Greek root entheos, which means filled with God. So when we are enthused, we're filled with God. We can think of ourselves as being infused with spirit, or inspired. When we are inspired, we are in spirit. So it's that same idea that this is a part of what the experience of zeal is like, what the feeling is, because zeal really has a lot of feeling in it, that comes with the knowing that we are connected. And those moments, too, when we get an aha, when we get an insight, when we have something to believe in or feel like we're contributing to something or something to look forward to, we are in the power of zeal, in the enthusiasm for life, the sense of engagement for it. So it fuels our sense of higher purpose, and it fuels our connection with God, and it's a feeling that comes with those experiences. When we are in zeal, we don't hold back, we don't play small, we don't complain, we don't quit, we don't limit ourselves. It's just not even in our purview when we're in this power, when it's ignited and activated and we're living from it and as it. And it is through that fuel of zeal that then we create the goodness we wish to experience in our lives, the healing, the wholeness, the prosperity, whatever it may be. The Revealing Word says, "Zeal is the inward fire of our soul that urges us onward." Naturally, it's orange, like fire. And it's located in the medulla, which, you know, I've always thought this place, you could probably feel it in yourself, this occipital space that's like where the head and the neck connect. I just realized through my hair, you probably can't see what I'm talking about. But you know that feeling? It just feels like a really special little spot, like something belongs there. Well, it is a special spot. That part of our being is where the head is connected to the spinal cord, and all kinds of stuff happens there. You know, that's where the nerve signals go to and from the body, and they regulate things like heartbeat and breath. I mean, really key things, right? Blood pressure and so on. In the image that we have here, there's more, it's busier than we need, but that brighter orange is actually where we're talking about the power of zeal, that almost reddish. And it is sometimes called the ninth chakra or the mouth of God. I love that. So yeah, it is a special place. And the mouth of God is because it's seen as the place where when we are created, the breath of God moves through us. It's from that place. So it was so right on cue that the baby was here. Like, it's like, how much better could that be, right? You know, as we are rebirthing ourselves, as we are feeling the fresh breath of God infill us, it's every time we renew ourselves in this way, when we go to those places of silence or even movement and activeness, but we are present, right, to the infilling of spirit. And that gives us the sense of, I'm glad I'm alive. I feel that spark within me, that spark of divinity, that sense of purpose that keeps propelling me forward to do the things that ought be done by me, whatever those are. So Paramahansa Yogananda spoke about this idea of the mouth. I don't know if he said the mouth of God, but spoke about the importance of this space for the medulla. And he says this. Do you know who? He is the guy who wrote Autobiography of a Yogi, and founded Self-Realization Fellowship. And he says this about the medulla. vibrating life energy from the omnipresent cosmic source is continuously received through the subtle astral centers in the medulla. When I hear that, I want some of that, please. I mean, I'm not really sure what it all means, but it sounds really wonderful, doesn't it? It sounds like a kind of spiritual energy and vibration we all want to live in and have our being in and move in. Zeal is that impulse to go forward in life. And so when we don't have that impulse, there's kind of an inertia that sets in, right? A sense of stagnation, a sense of kind of, ugh, the blues maybe, or lackluster, or feeling just, you know, like life is kind of ho-hum and everything's just sort of getting through. And none of us want to be without our zest for living, right? As humans on this path, there is sort of this coming and going, remembering and forgetting experience that we often have, right? But as we go further on our journey, that pause between those two things, those peaks and valleys, gets smaller and smaller, right? Because we tend to stay in the energy more, and we learn tools to allow us to connect in more often so that we forget less and we lose our zest for life less. And often that is a part of the journey. Anthony DeMello is an author who talks about this story of a master talking to a student. And he says, to the woman who complained that riches had not made her happy, the master said, "You speak as if luxury and comfort are the ingredients of happiness." He said, "Whereas what you need to be really happy, my dear, is something to be enthused about." And so it's that, right? When we feel that way, it's just like, oh, I just need something to be excited about, something to look forward to, something to plug into. What is it that would excite me in this moment? What brings me joy? I invite you just to close your eyes for a moment and ask yourself, go to that place of discovery within. Who or what do I love and care about? What lights me up? Exactly. Like, what makes you want to do that? Ooh. Who knew what joy you were bringing us today? So what brings you joy is a question to sit with. What lights me up? What gives me a sense of purpose, or gratitude? Whatever that is, just allow yourself to connect with it and say, I'm going to do more of that that brings forth, whatever it is that brings forth this experience. Or I'm going to be more with that person that I care about or that I love that brings me joy to be with. Or whatever it is, an activity, a person, a situation, a place, just make a little commitment to yourself right now, or a big one, to let that be the magnetizing power to bring forth your zeal, to discover it or rediscover it. You know, at any time we can rediscover our zeal if we feel like it's slipped a little bit. By doing just this, by just dropping back into the presence, opening up to spirit, inviting the energy forward, inquiring for ourselves, what is it that will help me bridge that gap? Come to that place once again and be filled. You know, when we rediscover our zeal, it's like we've just won a race or discovered a nugget of gold or something. You know, it's that moment of eureka, right? It's so exciting. It's so exhilarating to be in that space when the zeal comes back pouring in, when the excitement and enthusiasm and engagement comes again. And so it is always here, knocking literally at the back of your head, waiting for you to wake it up and open to it, because it's always here within us. Even if we think we've lost it, we've never lost any of these things. We've just misplaced them. right? And so it's opening once again. Another place we can go and ask ourselves is, what makes you jealous? You think, what? Jealousy? I didn't come to church to hear about this. You know, Strong's Concordance says that zelos, the Greek word, shares the same root with jealousy. Zealousness and jealousness come from that same root. And so actually, when we feel jealous, it can help us to pay attention to that feeling, because what's happening is when we feel jealous of another person or a situation, it is pointing to a deeper longing within us, right? It's not really about that person or that outer situation, but a mirror is being put up for us to say, there is a longing in you. And so if we allow our jealous feelings to arise and then work with them to say, what longing is this pointing to in me? Then we can quickly abandon the jealous feelings and go to that place within us where we come alive again. And so it's that that helps us. Jealousy, just, we can think of it as suppressed zeal. So when it shows up, we just go, oh, hello. Hello, behind you is longing. Where is the longing? So that I can feel good again. I can feel on top of the world. I can feel excited about life once again. Let it be our helper. And, you know, when we talk about these powers, we're talking about them this summer, especially in the context of healing and prosperity. And as we look at this power of zeal, you know, especially comes with a sense of health and vitality and vibrancy quite naturally, and also with a sense of purpose that we plug into that buoys our prosperity, our experience of making good in the world, of feeling connected in the world, that often brings a sense of prosperity, sometimes a literal experience of financial prosperity, as well as an experience of just feeling good about our service in the world. And so Zig Ziglar tells this story about a bunch of guys standing around a railroad yard that they're workers there. And as they're standing there talking near the tracks, up comes this stretch limo, and out pops this very well-dressed man. It turns out, the president of the company. And he sees one of the workers, and he says, hey, Bob, how's it going? And he comes over, and he gives him a big hug. And Bob says, I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing? And they have this moment, and all the other workers are just like, what's going on here, right? And so the president does whatever he came to do and say, and he gets back, and he drives off. And all the other guys say to Bob, how is it that you have this first-name basis connection with the president of the company? And he says, oh, we worked together 20 years ago right here in this railroad yard. And they go, well, okay, so then why are you still here? And he's president of the company. And he says, oh, because 20 years ago when Gene and I worked together, I was there for the paycheck. But Gene was there because he believed in it and had passion for the work that we were doing. That's the difference. And so it is for all of us to recognize that, right? To see that when we are plugged in, turned on, as Abraham says, you know, when we are excited and on fire and connected, that what it is that is ours to do, whether it be in the moment, in the day, for years to come, is alive and well in us, and we are connecting to it. You know, Vincent van Gogh talked about the power to create. So even if it isn't about necessarily that we're grounded in a sense of purpose necessarily, we are all co-creators. And so there is always something that we can create, that we can connect with the creative power within us in whatever ways that might want to express through us. Maybe it's cooking a meal, or maybe it's planting a flower garden or a vegetable garden, or maybe it's taking care of our grandchildren or our children or our parents. Whatever it is that lights us up, right, will come and will allow us to create in some way, to be creative, to bring creativity to the task. Even the most mundane tasks, we can bring creativity to them. So Vincent van Gogh knew this power of creativity really well. And even through his challenges of illness, he wrote to his brother Theo, "Ill as I am, I cannot do without something that is greater than I, which is my life, the power to create." We all have that. My life is the power to create, and we can't do without it. We are here to be co-creative beings. It's just it's just who we are. We can fight it if we want. We can try to shut it down if we want, but it's there. The creativity is there and wants to be made through us, created through us, through that breath of God that comes in through maybe the back of the neck that infloods the being, and then through us, through our hearts, through our hands, through our eyes, through our minds, whatever it is that's going to be created in the world. It's powerful stuff when we allow the power to move through us in this way. So we can get pretty on fire with zeal. Have you ever gotten like super revved up about an idea, and then you start to do the work and maybe it starts to get like a little bit tiring once we get into it, right? There's a lot to do, right? We're building a dream or we're making something happen. Yeah, so you're laughing. So a lot of you have had this experience, right? And so those are times when we say things like, I'm getting ahead of myself or I'm falling behind. You know, pay attention to our words, right? Because it indicates the energetic body, the ideas, the mental being, and the physical aren't really connecting. The physical can't keep up necessarily with all of that. And so it's getting to that grounded place that allows us to refuel, that allows us then to have the stamina to keep sizzling and not fizzle out, if you will, to not burn out, right? But to keep the fire burning. So if zeal is experienced in another way, it could be kind of on the surface as motivational rah-rah kind of energy, right? So you might go hear this really motivational speaker and you go, yes, I'm going to do it. I can do it. I've got the energy. And then it's just like, you know, it's like fireworks. It's great. And then it fizzles out, right? And so the zeal is something that we keep on nurturing and keep on coming back to and keep on being filled by. It's the entheos, filled with God, filled with spirit. And so as we infill, even as we get quiet and rest and get present once again in the silence, we get filled once again with that energy that allows us to go forward with engagement and excitement. So I think this power should probably come with a caution label. Maybe they all should, I don't know. But this one in particular seems like it maybe could. And so this is the thing, because it also shares this root, right, with the idea of zealousness. And so we can get overly zealous about something, and it can get to the point where it causes separation, violence, and that kind of thing, because we are so excited and passionate about our ideas that they become separating. And then we get so excited about them, we can stand in that space that then becomes problematic and conflictual. We see it all the time, right? You remember Jezebel from the Bible? So Jezebel got kind of a bad rap. And so it's always, you know, sometimes especially some of the women in the Bible that just get a little cursory story or they get a bad rap. Sometimes, you know, we have authors who write novels who help us sort of fill out the possibilities of who that person could be. And I happened to pick up this novel the other day called Jezebel by Megan Bernard. And it opens with this scene. I've only read the two pages, the opening scene, but I'm not going to tell you about the whole story. But I thought this was kind of interesting. So it opens with this scene where Jezebel is being born, and they say she cries really loudly, right? So she comes in roaring, you know, and her little palms are flailing, and the midwife says, oh, she's got this red star on her palm, and she said, she's been marked, and she steps away. And one of the other women who have been assisting with the birth says, oh, she's been blessed. It's the mark of the goddess. And the midwife says, no, the king is going to be very angry. And, you know, the queen is sitting there, the mother of Jezebel, going, you know, I don't really know the goddess that well, but, you know, I know my husband's anger. So, you know, we should probably remove the mark. And so they go ahead and remove it, you know, brutally, of course, in this kind of the old days. And then now let's fast forward with that possibility in mind of maybe a little more understanding of how Jezebel shows up super zealous and passionate and rageful sometimes. And so in the 1 Kings 19, we see that there's this religious battle going on. Jezebel is now the queen, and her god is Baal, and Elijah's god is Yahweh. And there is a battle going on of whose God is the right God. And they are killing each other's prophets, like left and right. And so all these prophets of Baal have been killed. And the king lets Jezebel know what's happened, what Elijah has done. And she is pretty angry. And so she lets Elijah know that he might receive the same fate. And he goes running. You know, and so what if... Let's like just imagine, reimagine that. What if these two super zealous for God people came together and talked about their passion for God and found the places where their visions overlapped? What if they together created a harmonious and richly interfaith community right there and then? It could happen, right? Miracles happen all the time. When you think about today, where you know how our community is plugged into the Interfaith Council of Contra Costa County and how we all come together when things happen, you know, like we had the Ukrainian prayer vigil on our labyrinth not long after Russia invaded Ukraine. And it was just beautiful to have people from other faiths to come to stand together and to say, we are for peace. Not what we're for against, but what we're for. That's what Mother Teresa said. You know, don't invite me to anti-war protests. I'm not coming, thank you. I'll keep declining your invitation. But invite me when you have a peace rally, I'll be there. It's what we're for, not what we're for against. That's where we want to put our zeal. So let's fast forward 4,000 years-ish to today. I was reading an article yesterday, and it got my attention because it said she bought a mountain for God. I thought, ooh, I got to read this. I want to know who bought a mountain for God. And it's this woman, Tammy Barthen, in Pennsylvania that was just going to purchase, she and her husband were going to purchase a cabin, a retirement cabin, and she felt guided by God to buy the whole mountain. So she did. And it's turned into this whole thing where potential funders came along and they've created this vision and they're establishing a Christian kingdom. And they're thinking that they're going to have a lot of influence in all the spheres of life and government and education and so on. And on the land, they envision that there will be pistol ranges and they're really creating kind of a warriorship, right? So I'm reading this article, and I'm going, okay. So now I'm like starting to feel like our visions are converging, or diverging, right? And then it's made clear that in this new kingdom that only heterosexuals are invited and only binary gendered folks are invited. And so it's like, oh, okay, so I'm out of the kingdom now. But as I'm reading on, it gives some of their credo. And their vision is no racism. Whoa, I can get behind that. No poverty. Whoa. In order to move forward, we must make good on the treaties with Native Americans that, you know, we're so, we know. We know the heartbreak of that, right? And we know how we all in this room want to make good and atone and repair whatever it is that we can where there are rifts in our society. And so there were these places where I was connecting with this woman's zeal and vision and places where I was feeling pulled away from it. And it was like, I was so glad I read the whole article and sat with it for a minute, you know? Because imagine, because you on the face of it, it looks like, oh, Tammy and Kristen's visions, whew, no, they could never be friends, you know? And maybe we couldn't, I don't know. But I would be willing to try. Because you know, when we say, wow, your passion, your zeal, I could really appreciate that. I would like to know more about this God you feel so passionate about. I would like to know more about what it is that you're wanting to co-create in the world. I would like to understand more how you interpret the teachings of Jesus, who I see as a person of inclusivity and love. And I'm trying to reconcile that. You know, if we could have these kinds of conversations, imagine the world we could create together. And even, yeah, you could do that. And even if the conversations aren't ready to be had face to face, if we come with a, yet last week's power, willing. I am willing. I am willing to look for where things connect rather than disconnect. I am willing to look for where things converge rather than diverge, where things unite rather than divide. And if we all walk with that kind of intention, then we are creating what we want to create. It's so easy for all of us to say, I want this and I'm going to come over to the people who agree with me, and then that's the only people I'm going to hang with or pay attention to or listen to. But meanwhile, there's a lot of stuff going on in our world, right? And it's important we're also paying attention, eyes wide open, to the visions and the passions and the zeal of other people in our world and what they are co-creating. I mean, being able to buy a mountain for God is pretty incredible. And so I want to buy a mountain for God. Do you? On my mountain, many paths to the one will come up that mountain. But that's just my vision. It doesn't mean my vision's right. It doesn't mean somebody else's vision is wrong. What it means is we all have passion. We all have zeal. I so much want to tell you another story, but I feel like it'll just go on too long, so I'll tell you another time. Come back next Sunday. Maybe we'll work it in there. Tangle a carrot, right? So, you know, if you think about let's go back to what would Jesus do, right? What did Jesus do? So Jesus drew as his closest followers Simon the Zealot and Matthew the tax collector. Now, you couldn't know how far apart those two are, right? Simon is part of the zealots who are using violence for Jewish power, for the Israelites to keep power against the Roman infringement of power, right? So there's political power in this whole experience that the zealots are up for, and it's out of their zeal, out of their passion for their culture and for their people and their religion. And then on the other hand, you've got Matthew, who's a tax collector, who most of the Jews are not finding to be the most popular guy on the block, because he's working for the Romans and he's collecting taxes from people and it's squeezing people, right, financially from their prosperity. And Matthew's getting wealthy off of this. And Jesus calls these two guys, not just to, you know, hang out for a minute or come to a Sunday service, right? We're talking camping together, making meals together, sitting around the fire together, preaching together, building together, surviving together. I mean, this is like your closest of your close buds, and you pick the two most polar opposite folks you could, right? So I don't know if Jesus thought about all that, but what I do know is he saw two men who felt a call to know God, to felt a call to follow those teachings. And I think that might be all there was to it. And so to look for where the commonalities are, where the zeal is, where the passion is, where the spiritual magnetism is, and to go there. So these guys end up being brothers, right? Joel Ryan says in an article that says, why would Jesus call a zealot to be a disciple? Says Jesus would have been a disappointment to the zealots of his day. They wanted revolution. He wanted spiritual renewal, revival, and reconciliation with God. Simon the Zealot was transformed by Christ's love and mission of grace. In contrast to his former life of violence, political activism, and extremism. It's easy to direct our zeal to what we are against, but let's not do that. Let's direct our zeal toward what we're for. Here at Unity, our vision is a spiritually awakened world where all life thrives in conscious oneness. Can you get behind that? Yeah. So let's go forward and sizzle with zeal to spring forth to do the things that ought to be done by us. Let's say it in Charles Fillmore's shortened words as our affirmation. Together, I sizzle with zeal to do the things that ought to be done by me. And so it is.